Welcome to your turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. It's a very hot morning over most of the U.S., and it's you folks in Texas and Oklahoma and the West who've been having it. Well, we're getting it now here on the East Coast, so thank you very much for that. Got two really good guests today, and couldn't be coming at a better time. First off, we're going to talk with Bruce Moyer. He is executive director and legislative spokesman for something called the Federal and Postal Coalition. We'll find out what that is, and he's going to give us the latest about what they may have heard from the White House and Congress as to what plans the politicians have for you federal workers and retirees. Then we're going to switch over midpoint to Steve Watkins, a regular and editor of the Federal Times, and they have been tracking all of this. And Steve has some very bad news for not only federal retirees, but people who are working for the government who will be retiring in the future. So it's bad news, but it's accurate and honest, and that's about as good as we can do. We're going to go to Bruce Moyer first. Bruce, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Hey, welcome, and thank you for being with us. Bruce and I dealt with each other for many years. He ran the Federal Managers Association, and so you know the government intimately, and you are an attorney and a registered lobbyist, correct, Bruce?
That's correct.
Good. First, tell us what I want to ask you about the Federal Postal Coalition. What is it?
Well, the coalition is an alliance of about two dozen employee associations throughout the government, labor unions, management associations, professional associations of federal employees and retirees. In total, the coalition represents the interests of about 5 million federal and postal workers and retirees. As you know, in Washington, all kinds of interests are represented by associations and organizations, and two dozen of them represent various sectors of the federal employee and postal employee community. Those groups make up the Federal Postal Coalition. It's been around in various forms since the early 80s, was responsible really, was kind of the driving force for the creation of FERS when Congress was looking at pushing the federal workforce into Social Security. You'll recall that under the old Civil Service Retirement System, those employees are not covered by Social Security. And when Congress was considering doing that in the 80s, our coalition was responsible for creating the TSP and the other components of the FERS system. Since then, has continued to advocate for a strong federal workforce that's able to retain and attract the best talent possible, and that lies through the preservation of a good compensation package.
Oh, I had forgotten about that emphasis on Social Security getting feds into it, because that was the largest group of workers in the country, including some states, I believe Alaska and others, that were not under Social Security and wanted to get them in. Bruce, your people, they range from labor unions who endorsed President Obama's election to management and retiree groups that are try to maintain a strictly nonpartisan or bipartisan attitude. But you guys recently, I believe, wrote the president and the Congress and asking, in effect, what's going on here? What are you going to do to us?
Yes, we did. We sent a letter last week to the director of OMB, Jack Lew, and the secretary of the Treasury, Tim Geithner, saying, hey, we're about 2 weeks out from hitting a default if Congress and the president do not raise the debt ceiling. What's going on to assure the continuity of government operations? There was a blackout, in a sense, of much information back in April by the administration as we approached the prospect of a government shutdown. And in a way, this has some aspects of a deja vu again. If the debt ceiling is not raised, so increasing numbers of managers and executives as well as rank-and-file employees are wondering, well, what happens on August 3rd? And this was underscored by the president's own comment on July 11th that he could not guarantee that the 27 million Social Security checks that are due out on August 3rd, one day after the government essentially would go into default, that those checks will be mailed out if the debt ceiling is not raised. So if that's going to happen to Social Security checks, what employees implicitly of the Social Security Administration aren't going to be at work that day, then what happens to veterans' benefits? What happens to a range of government activities that Americans rely upon?
Well, it's supposed to be a transparent administration. What did they tell you?
We haven't heard a thing from this administration yet. They have not responded to our letter. And I understand also that similar inquiries from the press have not really received much in the way of helpful information from this administration.
Well, Joe Davidson of the Post in his Federal Diary column said that he'd ask around and was referred to the various places and finally got to the OMB and they punted, meaning they did not give him an answer. So we really don't know other than sort of scary warning from the president that he couldn't guarantee that Social Security checks or debit payments or what have you that were due to be processed on August 3rd would be processed.
That's correct. And there are a range of questions that we asked in our letter to both the OMB director and the Treasury Secretary, not only in terms of what's in place to assure the continuity of government operations, but also how will the assets of the government's retirement and pension fund and the G fund within FERS be impacted? You know, there's a bit of misinformation out there, Mike, about the notion that when we hit August 2nd and that there's a failure to raise the debt ceiling, that we then go into a new mode with regard to the prioritization of the government's payments in order to be able to satisfy those interest payments on Treasury securities that are out there and all around the world. Well, we've already been in this kind of a non-payment mode since May 16th, when the Treasury Secretary sent the letter that he was required to send both to Congress and to other officials, apprising them that at that point, the government, the Treasury Department, began to shift around funds, including tapping into existing accounts. And it was already 2 months ago that the Treasury started to tap into the G Fund and, in a sense, the money market fund of FERS that millions of federal employees and retirees have billions of dollars invested in, and started to tap that money in order to be able to pay existing obligations. Will that continue after August 2nd, and under what new terms, we were wondering about. Additionally, if there is a shutdown, does that mean furloughs will come into place? What does it mean in terms of wages and benefits? Do employees receive an IOU on those, or what? A bipartisan Policy Center report that came out last week suggested that the prioritization of payments in order for the government to get by under a couple of scenarios continued to put federal salaries below the line of prioritized payments. In other words, they would not be, federal employees would not be paid at least immediately for their services. Now, when we've run into shutdowns in the past, there has been a retroactive effort on the part of Congress to provide back pay. We're moving into uncharted waters these days with regard to some of these questions and looking at the experience of some states like Minnesota that's just now wrapping up a shutdown that extended over 2 weeks.
Bruce, let me interrupt you. We need to take a short break.
Sure.
Here, but when we come back, I do want to ask you more about this possibility of furloughs and payless paydays. I'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. This week, my special guest is Tom Burdett of the Burdett Smith Group and interviewed by my partner, John Dedon. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Schneider Electric has a proven 100-year-long record of supporting federal agencies to help you meet your responsibilities to mandates, missions, and taxpayers by combining the expertise of brands you know and trust, like Square D, APC, and Pelco, to make your energy safe, reliable, efficient, productive, and green. When it comes to power, process and machine, IT room, building, and security management, Schneider Electric's your energy expert and green partner for a sustainable and prosperous future. Visit Schneider-Electric.us.
What are wiki technologies? How can government agencies use wikis to more effectively meet mission? And what are some of the key challenges and best practices for the use of wikis in government? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Professor Enos Mergel, author of the recent IBM Center report, Using Wikis in Government, a Guide for Public Managers, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Young, gov, and awesome? Join 500 federal emerging leaders at the only conference created by and for younger feds. The Next Generation of Government Summit, presented by Young Government Leaders and GovLoop, takes place July 28th and 29th at the JW Marriott. Federal News Radio listeners, save on registration. Use the discount code FEDRADIO to save $55. Visit nextgengovt.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Bruce Moyer. He is a spokesman for the Federal Postal Coalition, which, as he explained earlier, has been around for years, and it's been sort of revitalized because of the budget uncertainty and the problems with both the Congress and the White House that federal workers are having. Bruce, before we took a break there, we were talking about the fact that federal salaries, federal compensation, was below the radar line for what they call prioritized services in case there has to be a government shutdown or a furlough of any kind. And you say they haven't answered your questions, the coalition's questions. The administration hasn't told them what the situation is. Can we assume that it will be much like it was in April when we were facing a shutdown or furlough, and the administration said that about 600,000 people would be furloughed?
That's a likely target, Mike. It's difficult to know, since we're in, as I said earlier, uncharted territory here, exactly how this administration would approach a default and a shutdown. But certainly there are payments, Social Security payments, veteran disability payments, even defense vendor payments that may well take priority over the payment of at least all federal salaries. Those employees considered essential under government shutdown plans in the past may well be asked to continue to come to work. We're talking there about certain Homeland Security personnel, air traffic controllers, for example, certain DOD folks. But there are other departments that are heavy on the program front that may well have to shut down for as long as a default situation may be in effect. Now let's hope there is not one, but we'll see. Mike, I'd also like to just comment, if I could, about one other aspect, if I might, with regard to tapping into the G Fund and the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund. Although the administration has been doing that for the last 2 months, we can pretty well rest assured that those monies that have been used to pay other expenses that have been drawn out of those funds that have billions of dollars in them and are largely the assets of federal employees and retirees, there is a law in place already that requires any time that the government does that to essentially write an IOU and reimburse for whatever amounts that were taken out after the suspension period has ended, suspension period for any additional investments, or it also covers taking out monies. So I want to make sure that your listeners are aware that they are protected, but nonetheless, we're talking about, you know, Peter and Paul and their monies that are being cross-funded through the government right now in order to get by, and what additional measures that the Treasury will have to undertake even beyond this if a default were to come about are really up in the air.
Well, we've had a number of queries here at Federal News Radio from people who want to know, it's kind of sad that they're asking us, but they want to know what they should do with their TSP. Should they get out of the G Fund? What's going to happen? And, of course, none of us are qualified to give an answer like that. It's an individual decision. None of us have the training. It would be wrong and foolish for us to give people advice, and wrong and foolish for them to take advice. But as my understanding is, as yours, is that it's a promissory note out there, and what the government is doing is guaranteeing these people will be paid at a rate that's set each month by the Treasury. And one thing I did hear, and again, this is no advice to go or stay from the G Fund. I think the worst thing people can do is try to guess a situation and make financial judgments based on that. It's like timing the market. But one person said that if the government, quote, defaults, it will have to pay a higher rate of interest in order to get people to borrow from it, and that it could actually be a good thing for the G Fund. So, you know, these theories are all over the place, and we'll just have to wait and see. But
that's right.
The uncertainty is there, and you know, I was just thinking, I pretty much grew up in Washington. I've been on this beat a long, long, long time, and I have yet to be able to figure out when politicians are bluffing, when they're incompetent, or when they're simply lying about something to gain a point or to make a point or win a point. And on this, I find it hard to believe that there isn't a contingency plan for what happens if government services are disrupted for whatever reason.
You've got to believe that there is one, Mike, and that there are motives why, for political purposes, the transparency of that kind of contingency plan is not very very high right now. That there could well be, as they call it, the optics of appearing as though you are gearing up for a shutdown, as though you're trying to cause one, particularly if you have a contingency plan in place and you publicize it. So some have suggested that it's to the administration's benefit to not show its cards with regard to its preparations for a shutdown, out of fear, as though it's trying to nudge the government into a default and could potentially reap a political benefit. But But who knows, for the interests of managers and executives in the government, they'd like to know what measures they need to put in place in order to assure that there's a continuity there. For example, researchers at NIH who are engaged in medical research and experiments there that continue, Mike, for months, even years. When we faced the last prospect of a shutdown in April, that was averted at the 11th hour, many of those researchers were told, you can't come into your labs on Monday, and with no arrangements in place as to how that million-dollar research was going to continue without having to start over again if those experiments had to be shut down.
Well, there have also been situations in the past, and again, this wasn't the debt limit. This was furloughs resulting from failure of Congress to do its job and pass appropriations or pass bills to fund agencies. But there have been numerous times, four that I can think of, when people were literally told to come into work on a Friday or a Monday. They were told to report to work so that they could be told to go home. It had to be officially done. I think
right.
You probably remember those situations too.
Sure,
so,
I do.
So the ludicrous is not at all impossible in a situation like this. Now, your coalition, your Federal Postal Coalition, it covers the waterfront. I can't think of a group that I know of that is affiliated with the feds or postal workers or retirees that are not a part of it. But so this means that you really are speaking for someone in the Postal Service, even if they don't belong to the APW or the NALC. And you're speaking for federal workers, whether they belong to the NTEU or the AFGE or the Federal Managers Association or NARF.
That's right.
You're speaking for this group of 5 million people. And you've been, I just find it difficult that as particularly as friendly as the unions had been to the administration, that you haven't heard a word.
That's right. There's been a significant amount of frustration that the lines of communication have not been greater. And you're right, this is a broad coalition of groups. We don't necessarily agree on all issues, but there's some core issues at heart, both with respect to the preservation of a good, strong compensation package for federal employees and postal employees, the preservation of a good compensation or a good retirement package as well, and for the retention and the attraction of the best kind of workforce we can have in order to assure that the United States remains strong, that it remains a world leader, and that it has a good civil service that's merit-oriented, that assures that the United States can accomplish its aims.
I'm not lobbying for or against any of the unions or organizations. People belong them or not. That's their business. But I think it is important to know that at times like this, even the bitter rivals, the AFGE and the NTU had that tough fight over the TSA, and they're always at odds about various issues. The different groups, the managers groups see things differently than the rank and file employee groups. But it is interesting that at a time like this, they come together supplying people and money to fight for a common good. And I'm always surprised at how relatively few federal workers and managers and retirees and others who have a chance to join a group actually join it.
There are a lot of folks that like to climb on the wagon without necessarily paying the fare. There are others that are a little more broad-minded, that realize that the bills can't be paid without membership in either a management association or a union, whichever they happen to be in terms
yeah.
of either being a manager.
Well,
or
well the information like these groups supply people in the form of magazines and bulletins is to me, worth the price of the dues. Thank you, Bruce Moyer, for being with us. We'll check in with you later. We hope the worst doesn't happen, but if it does, we'll be on the job. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, just a minute.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of the Treasury says it plans to move to an all-electronic system for invoicing. Treasury will implement the Internet payment platform by the end of next fiscal year. Then starting in 2013, all of Treasury's vendors will have to use the electronic system in order to submit their invoices. The department says the move will save it around $7 million per year and improve the time it takes to process those invoices and pay the vendors by as much as 50%.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to FedTalk@FederalNewsRadio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. Host Deborah Roth will be joined by John Adler of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association to discuss the latest issues on Capitol Hill and how they affect federal law enforcement.
Retirement is expensive. You may need 70 to 90% of your pre-retirement income just to maintain your current standard of living. So how do you protect the money you've already saved from market fluctuations? How do you make sure you won't run out of money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait till Saturday? Then call me today at 301-773-3923.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Himalaya Herbal Healthcare.
Prostate cancer, smoking, and early death. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlo with HHS HealthBeat. Prostate cancer is not one of the more quickly fatal cancers, but a study indicates there is a way to make it worse. At the Harvard School of Public Health, Stacy Kenfield saw this in 22 years of data on more than 5,300 men who were diagnosed with prostate cancer. Those who were smokers at the time of diagnosis were more likely to die. But Kenfield says those who had quit smoking 10 years before diagnosis were no more likely than were men who had never smoked. And she says,
if one stops smoking, they have a reduced risk of prostate cancer recurrence and improved prostate cancer survival.
The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlo.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. I spoke with Bruce Moyer earlier. He told us about the what the federal and postal unions and associations have been getting from the administration and the Congress, and that is nothing. No information whatsoever as to what might happen if the government goes into default. Now we're going to get from a ground's eye view, if you will, talk with Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times. Steve, you with us?
Sure am. Good to
hey,
be with
thank you for being here. Always a treat to talk to you and get your perspective. There's so much going on, I literally don't know where to begin. And as we both tell our friends and family, this is not a drill. This stuff is for real. Start with the story you have today in the Federal Times. It says bipartisan gang of six endorses lower COLAs for federal retirees. And that was one of, I guess, there are three things that were the most feared that could possibly happen to federal workers. And this is one of them, this so-called chained COLA. Could you explain that?
Sure, yeah. That's one element of it. Basically, what the chain COLA would do is transition essentially the way COLA adjustments are calculated. And it would basically calculate COLAs to be slightly less than the way they're calculated now. And essentially what that calculation would do is factor in the fact that people tend to switch their buying habits when prices go up on certain things. So if beef price of beef goes up, people will buy more chicken and so forth. So what it does is experts say it's a more accurate reflection of the impact or the effect of inflation on people and not so much a reflection of the inflation itself. So that's essentially what it would do. If you look at it over, basically what the experts say is that the current estimates, the CPI U and CPI W consumer price index, those metrics basically overstate inflation by something like 1.1 percentage points a year. The chained CPI would grow less than the current CPI by 0.25 percentage points a year, and of course over time that has a bigger effect as it through compounded growth. So people would certainly feel the effect of that. I see the chain CPI as being among the most likely things that is going to come out of all this. It's been pretty much in everybody's deficit reduction plan, so that seems to have wide support.
Well, and that's one thing, too. Nobody wants to touch Social Security. It's known as the third rail of American politics. Touch it and you die. But if they went to the chain CPI, a lot of people, even though they might get wind that something untoward is happening to them, it would be very hard to understand.
Yeah, correct. And it's very complex to even talk about the current way that COLAs are calculated.
Yes.
I can tell you, it's one of the most frustrating and incomprehensible things to figure out and get your arms around. But basically, the chief difference is that this chain CPI is essentially a calculation that tries to be more accurate in terms of what the effect of inflation is on people, and obviously, inflation does change people's buying habits, so that's what it would try to capture.
Yeah, that's right. You walk more and drive less, and that sort of thing.
Right.
I've had a number of emails from people, and I know you have too, retirees who say whoever says inflation is down is nuts. You know,
yeah.
It's not, and then they go off with their list of drugs and bills and whatnot.
And I think that's a very strong and valid argument. Yeah. Obviously, you know, people what current calculations of inflation don't factor in as much as they should, and all your listeners understand that are things like healthcare premium increases, and particularly for the elderly, it affects them even more because their healthcare is a much bigger part of their expenses, and so that's a perfectly valid argument, I think, and so you know that, but that's not in the in the discussion today.
Yeah, well, and so many members of Congress too do retire from Congress or qualify for the federal health plan, and so they are under when it comes to coordinating with Social Security, is nothing better than the federal health plan. So mm-hmm. Even as retirees, these members of Congress may not know the impact of medical bills and premiums on the average American.
Right, correct. And you were mentioning about the Gang of Six plan. Basically, it's interesting. It could be a terrific development. It seems to have wide support within the Senate, which means that this could emerge as the long-term plan, deficit reduction plan that Congress may ultimately push forward. And there are some some public polls that seem to show that most Americans would favor a plan that includes some sort of tax revenues in addition to spending cuts. And so that does take the steam away from a lot of the Republicans who are holding very firm and fast against any kind of tax increase as part of a plan.
Well, and this could, I assume, be a bulletproof vest for some of the other proposals that are being looked at, the increasing the employee and retiree share of health premiums. That's something that's sort of floating out there in the ether.
It is, and it's not. It doesn't seem immediate. It's not in any legislation at the moment. However, I think it's worth noting that the Gang of Six plan does kind of give a passing or a glancing reference to that by basically saying that come 2020, that federal health spending is going to be put on a global budget with growth not to exceed the GDP plus 1%. Essentially, that was what was in the Simpson-Bowles commission plan, and obviously the Gang of Six proposal that everyone seems to be congealing around now was very much founded upon the Simpson-Bowles plan. And what that did was it basically would convert the federal health plan to what they call a defined contribution premium support plan. That's sounds convoluted, but basically what it is essentially a fixed subsidy that employees would have that they can put towards their health premium or toward a Medicare premium. And basically the chief problem with that everyone recognizes who would be the recipients of this,
yeah,
is that it would grow by no more than the gross domestic product plus 1% a year. And obviously healthcare premiums are growing leaps and bounds beyond that, so over time that would have a devastating effect on folks. And of course it could also squeeze people on the other end in terms of the benefits. In other words, that plans that could be offered at affordable rates wouldn't have the coverage that they do now. So that's a very scary proposition for everybody, because it's certainly going to amount to if this should ever pass, it's certainly going to amount to far higher costs and possibly, or more likely, degraded coverage.
Would that be a voucher plan in the sense that you'd have a fixed amount of money or a fixed percentage payment from the government, and you could buy around that, but at some point it might force some people into maybe a less generous plan simply because the premiums would be lower?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it sounds. Now, there's a lot of details to be sorted out should this get closer to reality, but that's exactly how it sounds, yeah.
Okay, that's one of the, and another thing that's worrying people, if you call them the unholy trinity, if that's not offensive, is this idea of having people pay more for their retirement benefits. And the original plan, as I understand it, was to increase the contribution for FERS employees, which is the vast majority of people who are working now, increase their contributions to 5.3 or 5.5, something like that. I've since heard from a fairly reliable source that there might be a compromise in the works on that, and that the number might be, they might do it, but not as much as they had threatened, and perhaps make it 3 or 3.2%. Have you heard that?
I've not heard that. That's encouraging if that's the case for obviously all your listeners and our mm-hmm. readers, because that would make a huge impact in terms of the pain of this, because the original plan, as you point out, would essentially feel like a 5% pay cut, because basically FERS employees, who after all are 80% of the federal workforce, would have to pay 5% more of their salary into their pension plan. So if it's going to be, you know, if that's on the table, I'm happy to hear that, but I've not heard that.
Okay,
myself.
Good. It may just be a shot in the dark, but I did hear it. Got an email from Nancy with NASA, and she said, what's this about Republican Senator Tom Coburn about use it or lose it sick leave idea? And I'm not up on that.
Yeah. Well, Tom Coburn, who actually is a member of the Gang of Six, he left the gang for a while, went on sabbatical, hammered out his own 600-page, $9 trillion deficit reduction plan, and then he came back and joined the Gang of Six again. So it seems like he just had to go off and purge for a little while and then come back and join the rest of the team. But basically his plan, which came out on Monday, is it's scary reading, I would imagine, for a lot of feds, but it does include a proposal among the salient points there that would affect your audience is, one, a freeze on locality pay for 5 years. The other would be a, just as your caller or email listener mentioned, it would eliminate the carryover of sick leave and vacation time. And cap sick leave at 13 days a year and cap vacation time at 30 days a year. And it has a whole host of other things. It would cut the federal workforce by 15%. It would go to, it also embraces the chain CPI, as we mentioned on the COLA. It would cut also the contractor workforce by 15%, which you don't often hear from the Republican side. It would also eliminate double dipping. That is, eliminate the ability of feds to retire and then take another federal job afterward and receive both their retirement and salary. That doesn't happen a whole lot, but there are probably a couple thousand, I'd say, of federal retirees who benefit from that because of some special exemption.
Right, and I need to take a break here, Steve, sure. but Congress dealt with that in a different way just a couple of years back. But take a short break here on WFED 1500 AM, talking with Steve Watkins from the Federal Times, and we'll be right back.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Researchers have long questioned why patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy tend to manage well through childhood and adolescence, yet succumb to their disease in early adulthood, or why elderly people who lose muscle strength following bed rest find it difficult or impossible to regain. Now scientists have identified a gene that may hold the key.
The gene is called EZS2.
Dr. Vittorio Sartorelli is a senior investigator at NIH.
It helps in understanding the biology. And before therapy, you have to understand the biology. Before fixing a car, you have to understand how that car works when it's fine.
For details on this study, visit www.niams.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
Join us next Sunday, July 24th. We'll be talking to the head pastry chef for Jose Andres Sink Food Group. Mm. And later in the show, Marian Esposito, you know her from PBS, she'll be talking to us about Ciao Italia.
That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 AM.
Are your business's online activities, networks, and information secure? Bolster your organization's cyber defenses by attending the Department of Homeland Security's G1st conference in Nashville, August 7th through 12th. The nation's premier cybersecurity forum allows government and industry leaders to share cutting-edge cybersecurity solutions. G1st is free, so register today at uscert.gov. That's uscert.gov. Remember, cybersecurity is our shared responsibility.
Some people can't imagine how someone who is blind or has other significant disabilities contributes to our economy. But more than 47,000 Ability One employees fulfill federal contracts, providing quality goods and services. Some people think that jobs for those who are blind or have other significant disabilities cost taxpayers. Ability One creates job opportunities without additional cost to federal taxpayers. Some think these individuals can't achieve independence. We know better. What do you think? Find out more at AbilityOne.org.
Could switching to Geico really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Can you find anything on the internet? Well, I'm sure you can, but don't take my word for it. Just ask this talking dog who can only say I love you. Roll the clip. One more time, talking dog.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Not even former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld can escape the TSA. No, indeed, Rumsfeld was selected for a full pat-down at Chicago's O'Hare Airport. Rumsfeld was reportedly all smiles and very nice throughout the procedure. He was probably gritting under his teeth. Probably. Just my guess.
That's the best noise you've ever made on, on the Federal Drive.
The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday morning, 6 to 10.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Watkins. He's editor of the Federal Times. And Steve, fascinating discussion of the Coburn plan. He left the Gang of Six, wrote his own, chiseled it in stone, and then brought it back to them. Now, are they? What's your feeling about these proposals? Some of these being incorporated in what the Gang of Six comes up with, or what the administration comes up with?
Well, on the Coburn plan, I don't think listeners should get too excited over that. I think it's recognized by most folks that it doesn't really have any chance of passing. However, I think what's significant about it is, Coburn is not your average Republican. For one thing, he's not running for re-election. He's leaving after his term expires, so he's putting it all on the table right now. His plan calls for new taxes, $1 trillion new taxes, eliminating tax expenditures, as they call them, and so forth. So that's an unusual thing to hear from a Republican. What's interesting, I think, about that plan is he gets really more than any other into the nitty-gritty of federal operations, I think, in terms of charting this deficit reduction proposal of his. And so I think we could see some elements of that show up in other plans. So I think that's the significance there, but it remains to be seen how much of that will show up in other plans.
Right. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The Gang of Six plan, I think, seems to be the front and center plan of the moment. Apparently it's garnering wide support within the Senate. We've heard Senator Kerry say that he sees a possible way out of the debt ceiling problem that everyone's looking at right now by somehow marrying up the Gang of Six proposal along with a debt ceiling extension measure. The problem with the Gang of Six plan right now is there are no details. It's not in legislative form. It would take a lot of time, more time than they have, to put into legislative language. So it's, as Senator Durbin has said, it's not ready for prime time at the moment. But it's possible that they could extend the debt ceiling with some promise to flesh this out further into legislative language. So that's one option on the table to figure out this debt that ceiling issue. Another is the McConnell-Reid plan, which seems to be the fallback plan that most people are likely to turn to. That would basically authorize President Obama to extend the debt ceiling and allow the Republicans to vote no on it, so they wouldn't have to take responsibility of it. And we'll see, you know, if it gets to that. But the good news is there does seem to be some options out there that are feasible anyway. So it's not a complete standoff.
Well, that's good to know. So the lady, the NASA lady, who she's saying, in effect, will I have time to get out of government? Because she has a lot. She has 875 hours of sick leave and 35 years under CSRS. She's got 5 months of annual leave saved up, and she's worried about losing that. But you don't think that she has to lose a lot of sleep on that?
Huh? I don't think so. No, yeah. I wouldn't make any rash retirement decisions based on what's happening right now.
You know, something you said, and you said in an earlier appearance on the show that stuck with me. I think you and a colleague interviewed Senator Ross from Florida. Is he?
Yeah.
And he was new to the committee, that oversees the civil service. But you were struck by his knowledge of how the government works in an HR and a benefits realm. And the same thing could be said here of Senator Coburn. Somebody did a lot of homework to understand how government benefits operate and how they differ dramatically from the private sector. I mean, I can see this coming up later on, somebody else championing this, because many private sector firms do not allow people to accumulate sick leave.
Yeah, I would say probably most.
Probably most, yeah, and I know it's certainly true here. And many of them do not allow, they don't have a very generous vacation package, but whatever they have, it's use it or lose it. You know, they want you to take it and be gone. They don't want to have to pay you for it, you know, 20, 30 years down the road at a much higher level of salary. So that's the kind of thing, if somebody even knew the differences between government and the private sector, I could see a cost-cutting, you know, let's whack the bureaucrats, politician coming on and dining out on this one.
Yeah, no question. And you see that as kind of a running theme, even starting with the Simpson-Bowles plans, that in a lot of cases that theme of we need to get federal pay and benefit plans on par with the private sector, that seems to run through a lot of it. You know, another thing that Coburn I thought was kind of an interesting insight, he puts a target on duplicative federal programs, and he would consolidate the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the Federal Labor Relations Agency, the Merit Systems Protection Board, the Office of Special Counsel, the Office of Government-Wide Ethics, all under OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, which I thought was interesting. It's like whoever zeroes in on some of these agencies, you know, it's even most feds don't know about them.
Right. And it's interesting, too, how Congress, it's almost like it's deja vu all over again. After many years of barring double dipping or making it very difficult, that is, for a federal worker or military retiree to come back into government in 2009, I believe it was, not that long ago, Congress said, look, given the situation, Homeland Security and the expertise we need to get a lot of people back into government. So they not only allowed it, but they endorsed it. And now 2 years later, someone is saying this is a bad thing. I need to take a break here, Steve. And thank you very much for being with us. And we're going to catch up with you next week and until this mess is settled. Thank you, sir.
Very good.
Thank you all for being here. Remember, the show is archived. You can listen anytime, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Have a good week.